Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
I'm Fishsticks.
And I'm Sophia, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
Full disclosure, this is take two. I didn't hit the record button, so there you go. Y'all can know that.
And full disclosure, this is going to be a fucking heavy episode,
yes.
So click skip if you're not in a good place. Actually, no. If you're native or indigenous, go ahead and skip if you're not in a good place. To everybody else, stay around and fucking listen.
Exactly. So basically, kind of the main topic of what we're talking about today, eco defense and protest solidarity. So what kind of, I guess, was sort of the inspiration behind this topic was some current events that are happening in Canada right now. And mm-hmm. Sophia, if you kind of want to start us off with explaining the situation over there.
Yeah, so here's kind of what's going down. I'm sure y'all have heard about residential schools or boarding schools. And if you haven't, well, it's my regret to inform you about what history is actually like. When people were trying to eradicate Indigenous people, it's a genocide. I'm going to call it absolutely what it is because there's far too much denial going on right now. What they would do is they'd break up families, right? They'd take your children away from you and stick them in a boarding school where you couldn't teach them any of your traditions or your language. And if they spoke your language, they'd get like assaulted and beaten in the worst ways, right? And I'm not going to go into full details about what happened to these kids at the residential schools because you can look it up. There's tons of survivors out there still who tell their stories, you know, because pretty much every form of child abuse imaginable went on there. And I can leave it at that. So you might have heard about the initial 215 children that were discovered in a mass grave unmarked at Kamloops, BC. That hit home really fucking hard to me too, because that is really close to my hometown. Like, I've been there. I know people who live in Kamloops, right? Mm-hmm. And people kind of just expected this to disappear there, right? But we are up to 572 children that they have pulled out of unmarked mass graves. And like, it's so fucking ridiculous right now because they're still refusing to call it a genocide. There are certain provinces, because it has to be done provincially, even though the federal government could mandate it, they're just choosing not to, because of course they're not. Why would you reveal the fact that your entire country is founded on fucking genocide, right? Because Canada has this really pretty boy image to maintain, right? Like, everybody in Canada, even though Canada is a colonizer state, okay? If you call yourself a Canadian, you're essentially identifying with colonizers, right? That's my personal opinion. Not everybody's going to agree with that, but it is what it is, right? So I don't fucking care for Canada at this point, and I'm already a little bit pissed off just talking about this, right? But the Canadian government doesn't want to unearth these kids because they'd actually have to take some responsibility for it, right? So they're pointing the finger at the Vatican and the Pope, and the Pope is pointing the finger at the Canadian government, right? And they're totally in bed with each other and also covering for each other at the same time, because like, they have dirt on each other and they could release it, right? But they're protecting their own, right? And everything's rank and file, and it just kind of like drives home how much this never stopped, right? Like, the last residential school closed in 1996. Like, there's still living survivors out there. I've talked to some of them. Like, it's fucking egregious, right? I'm just going to kind of like give you the list of where the children are found so far. There was 215 in Kamloops, BC, 104 in Brandon, Manitoba. You have 38 in Regina, Saskatchewan, 35 in Lestock, Saskatchewan, and 160 in Carlisle, PA. I don't know what the fuck PA is. I tried to figure it out earlier. And these are estimates. There's going to be a lot more. And there is 104 residential schools in Canada. That's five of them. Five of them turned up 572. So we can average at least 100 bodies per school. And we're going to still find more because I guarantee you they didn't bury them all in one spot, right? And there's even stories of like how they would incinerate the remains of children, so there's no way to find certain ones, right? So it's been a very painful few weeks, and right around the same time that this was happening, initially when they found the 215 in Kamloops, there was Fairy Creek logging going on, which in British Columbia, there is one of the last old growth forests in North America. It's also a coastal rainforest because of how much precipitation lands on the West Coast. And the NDP government, which promised to protect the old growth forests, which is one of their platforming things to get in, totally lied and turned around and sold the rights to Teal Jones, a logging company. So they've been in there for like the past year now or longer, cutting these super old growth forest trees. Like, there's a photo of one that was so devastating for everyone to see because the tree was so big it took up an entire log truck. An
Damn.
entire fucking log truck. I will post a link to that in show notes so you can give it to the episode. So there's like photos of people sitting in this tree, and it's so big it's incomprehensible, and they're killing something that's like thousands of years old, right? And so it kind of got me to a point where I was like, I can't not want to talk about this in the episode, and like talk about what we can do to get out there in solidarity with like Indigenous communities and other marginalized groups, just like we did last summer with Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd protests, right? And like, police still aren't fucking reformed, and pretty much everything in America they're trying to just make go back to normal right now, but it's like there is no more normal, like our normal is being fucking genocided, right? And having people completely deny it. So it's a real fucking hard position to be in without being a little bit angry and also being sad and having space to mourn, right? So yeah, I wanted to talk about not just the problems, but like some solutions and what we can actually do and how we can show support and actually maybe even do some controversial things like spiking old growth forest trees, which is where you put little bits of metal into the bark so that if they go to cut it down, it destroys saw blades. And it's super fucking illegal. And I might even get in trouble just for saying that, but it's a thing you can do.
I actually didn't know
Yeah.
that was a way to like to be a deterrent for them cutting down trees. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's super illegal, and they don't like to talk about it when it happens because then it would give people the idea to go do it.
Yeah, it can. I mean, and the problem with, so going back to the problem with the residential schools and the issue of the residential schools, like to give you an idea, and I've done some reading on this, I'm not Canadian, but to give you an idea of exactly how many kids they think are in the ground right now, depending on which authority you are asking and whether or not you actually believe that all of them were accounted for in different registers for the schools, the count is anywhere between 3,000 to 6,000 kids in the ground right now.
Damn.
That's fucking staggering, okay? It is absolutely staggering.
For a school. That's what I'm saying. Like, these were not,
For
you know, these were not
these
schools, quote unquote, you know?
No, these were re-education boarding schools. They were essentially lockups, and they were populated by kids that were stolen from First Nations families, from Inuit families, from Métis families, and just subjected to just the worst shit you can think about that we can't really put to words right now. Like that's fucking ridiculous. That
And the government is just kind of being like, well, we didn't do it. It's not
Well, we
our
didn't.
fault.
It's not us. It's not the Canadian government. It's the Catholic Church. Well, it's not us. It's not the Vatican. It's the Canadian government. It's like nobody.
They don't want to take the blame.
And all the apology in the world is not going to make a fucking difference when there are no actual laws and protections in place, when nobody is taking the issues of Indigenous folks in North America and Canada seriously, because it doesn't seem like anybody is.
Yeah,
And
and sorry, go ahead.
it's just like, and how do you insist that they take you seriously And it, like, of course, our unique problem as magicians is, like, how do we help them? How do we help this entire situation get taken more seriously by the people who need to be taking it seriously? So, mm-hmm. like, it comes to the idea of solidarity. So, like,
I guess one thing that kind of comes to mind, right? So, for someone who is not Indigenous, right? So, for someone who's not Indigenous, you know, but, you know, is a practicing witch or magician of some caliber, you know, I hate the way this is going to sound, right? But the question is, what do they gain from caring? You know what I mean? Like, what...
Oh, I have so much to explain about that. Like, yeah. You have a lot to gain.
Because it's such, like, a loaded... And I know that there's so much there, but I'm just... Oh. I guess I'm asking that question for the people who can't ask the question. Like, what do you as a non-native person, you know, descendant of, you know, colonizers, whatever, what do you have to gain by putting your energy behind this movement?
Why does it always have to be something about gaining? Mm. And that's the exact thing I gotta ask.
Mm. See, because that's what people ask, like, you know, well, what exactly. do I gain, you know?
So here's where I'm gonna come out from it. Like, I'm mixed Indigenous descent. I don't have status. I go to certain things within the community, but I'm not, like, in the core group. I've even caused harm within the community that I have to be accountable for. But I am of the descent, and I am Native, and I am responsible for this, right? And I haven't made a single dollar ever off of being Native. I've actually, like, spent a lot of money just helping other people out, and that isn't a brag, and I'm not even going to put details to what I've done with that stuff. But, like, there's a very real sense of responsibility for me, you know? Like, I have to give back to people who have less than me, because I know what it feels like to have so little and to be in a fucking awful position and have very little, and to have other people help you out and actually pull you out of that, you know? And, like, now that I'm actually finally able to take care of myself just a little bit, you know, all I want to do is give back as much as I can, right? Because I see how it works. Because that's what actually will heal me and the land and everything, right? All of everything that's fucked up in society right now is because it's all about the selfish individual. It's never about the collective. Right. People can just never stop for a second and realize that you are going to die. All of us are going to die. You only are going to be able to pass on this world to other people. You can take nothing with you, okay? So what do you choose to leave your children? What do you choose to leave the world that you're more than likely going to be born into again if this is how you fucking treat it? You have to be conscious of it. Like, we may be living in an infinite dream where magic is real and the sky is the limit, but people still suffer. There's still tangible lives that matter. What do you gain out of it? You gain being a human being. You gain being a part of something that's real. And instead of having to feed your self-inflated narcissistic ego of pumping yourself up and trying to believe that you individually are special, you can realize that you're special just by virtue of being a part of the true infinite, that you were made from a piece of creator, and that you truly have divinity and free choice, and you can do whatever the fuck it is that makes your heart sing. Or you can be selfish and hurt other people and watch the land slowly turn to rot, and you can slowly lose your drinking water and slowly lose your air and slowly lose your food and slowly lose your home, as everybody else does too. But we're all going to go through it together. So you can either have your humanity and have a place to live, or you can have death at a very slow, painful rate. Choice is yours.
Damn.
Honestly,
I just had to sit with that for a sec.
there's no way around it. You either show up and be in solidarity with Indigenous people all around the world, or we die together.
Yeah, and I kind of mentioned this in a previous episode, That, you know, especially in America, that we kind of have this perception that Native people are foreign, even though they were here first, right? So I kind of explained this before, like, colonizers came over here, like, hey, they already had it in their mind, we're taking this land, this land is our land, I don't give a fuck. They come here, you know, history happens, and Native people are treated like foreigners on their own land, because of, you know, colonization. So, and that, that has stuck around. That has stuck around, in American society, because, you know, sort of like this idea of an American is sort of this person who's, I don't know, I guess, white, whatever, and that's not, it's not accurate. It's completely inaccurate, and it's so interesting to me how we've kind of, history has been, you know, written by a particular group of people for so long, and I'm trying to figure out how the fuck did it happen like this? Like, why wasn't the problem identified sooner? Or was it? Or sometimes I just wonder, is there not enough of people that are pro-humanity as a collective? Is there not enough of us?
So, I'm just going to give my hot take, and then I want to pass up the mic because I don't want to talk all episode just and hog it. But I really think what it comes down to is privilege is the ultimate insulator. If you've never had to be around other people who suffered, had to sit with their stories, watch their tears, see their children pass away, how could you feel their pain? If you never had to miss a meal, how would you ever empathize with someone who is starving?
So do you think I guess the question's really open to both of you. Like, do you think that people who, because we all know, like, the type of people, you know, I'm kind of thinking of, like, the people who will just laugh in your face about this kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you'll be like, hey, you know, they found 300, you know, they found hundreds of bodies of dead kids. Like, that's really fucked up, and people will laugh about that. There are people who will just be like, whatever. And they really don't care. And so, I guess, I'm struggling, I guess, the more that I age and think and develop as a person, I'm really struggling with how to fucking deal with those types of people, because they are so in the way of the problem, and it seems, and it, I don't know why, but it seems like their voices get echoed the loudest for some reason, and I don't know how we can change that. So, like, we need an entire cultural shift, I guess, is kind of what I'm getting at. We need an entire cultural shift. And you know what? This is crazy, because I was reading, sometimes I have downtime in my job, and I was reading a DKMU text, actually. I have it right here. It's Chaos Magic and Urban Shamanism.
Yeah!
Yeah. And I was just, like, reading, they were saying something about, like, basically, this is what it was. It was in one of the thesis statements. So the thesis statements. Through the facilitation of the microcosmic evolution of human consciousness, macrocosmic evolution of humanity as a whole may be realized. In order for this to occur, a majority of the human race must be actively facilitating the evolution of their consciousness. And that hit me really hard, because I was like, well, if that's the, you know, if that's a theory that we're kind of running with here, like, the majority of humanity? That's, I don't know if it's possible.
You know, I don't know, I feel like it is. I feel like we always just see all the worst news all the time, right?
Yeah.
We do. And a lot of it comes down to being the loudest voice in the room and who currently is. Because when you hear about these shitheels, these sheds who legitimately laugh at the deaths of kids, and, you know, the situations like we're seeing right now, they're a minority. It's And when you're in that siege mentality and you feel like you're surrounded by people who really legitimately do not give a fuck about you, and not only that, they fucking hate you, it's easy to just hear those people. And they end up becoming a rally point for folks that don't know better. And I'm not saying that they should be forgiven for being fucking ignorant and privileged. They shouldn't be. But at the same time, say that you are from a position of privilege. Say that you don't know any Indigenous folks at all. You didn't grow up with them. That's the reality for a lot of folks that live in urban centers. And you don't know what they go through. It was a byline in your history class in the elementary school, maybe. It's a chapter. And all that you see in your media every day, or read every day, or hear about every day, are a specific projection of what Indigenous folks are supposed to be. Set on this weird, foreign, distant pedestal as though they no longer fucking exist. Because, you know, that was the goal, apparently. And they stand apart. And that's part of that foreignness that you mentioned. They stand apart. And we are several generations past, at least in some places in North America, from the point where they were being actively fucking genocided against. Mm-hmm. And it's like the situation with anti-vaxxers now. You've benefited from all of this extra space, or vaccines in that case. You benefited from all of these things for several generations and forgotten the human cost of the things that you've benefited from, I guess. So, you know, you've got these anti-vaxxers now who got vaccinated as kids and like to pretend that they didn't. But then you've also got, you know, all these white folks, and some who aren't, who have lived here all their lives. And they know history, but they weren't there to experience it. And there's just something weird about the human psyche, wherein if you didn't experience it or have someone attached to you that went through it, that you know personally, it's not really real, is it?
Yeah, there's like a disconnect. And I think, like, as, I don't know, like, you would think that with modern technology and media, right, like, we can blast you with videos and pictures and images and just constant stimuli of, and show you in high definition, right, of all the evils of the world. And there is still this layer of, well, I'm not affected.
Yep.
It doesn't affect me. And it's like, well, you think it doesn't.
That's the thing, really. And the fucked up part is that a lot of folks don't even actively think, well, it doesn't affect me. It just doesn't. And so it's not a priority for them on an unconscious level. And these are the same people who tell themselves that they are humanitarians, and they do think of people aside from themselves. And they do. But only in a limited capacity. That's the thing, you know. It's very limited.
This kind of feels similar to how you don't put a lobster in a boiling pot of water. You put it in a cool pot of water and heat it up. People won't notice it as much when it's a slow creep, you know. People
that's are already always willing happening to adjust. In a bad yep. way. I mean, it's happening in a bad way. I saw, I mean, not to get, like, all, you know, everyone put your tinfoil hats on, but, like, I saw some fucking thing in the news. It was Amazon is going to, the hell was it? Something about Amazon is going to be able to connect to people's, like ring cameras and, like, cameras that they have, like, outside their houses and stuff. Basically,
Huh? They already can. You can lash it up to Alexa.
Yeah. That's what it is. Like, you can, like, hook it up to Alexa or something like that, and they're all gonna, like, be on one network or some shit. Basically, like, Amazon can look at you wherever you are. Which I'm like, well, why wouldn't they sell that, you know, that technology or that data to, you know, the police or the military? You know, it's just like...
Yeah. You mean, like, they're selling their facial recognition technology? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I also say, tragedy of Amazon that not a lot of people like to talk about. Anytime you talk about Amazon now, people only think about Jeff Bezos and not the fucking rainforest.
What about the rainforest?
That's what the Amazon is originally named.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody, I thought you meant Amazon was doing something in the rainforest. I was the rainforest?
It's like, if you think about it, it's basically like, hey, let's take a real important area and just kind of take the name and kind of take some of the attention away from it. You know what I mean?
It's kind of crazy because, like, especially growing up as a kid, it was almost sort of like a meme, as horrible as it sounds. Like, you know, recycle paper, save the Amazon rainforest. Is sort of this, like, right, idea.
And who contributes to how much fucking waste now? Amazon.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And the only reason it's named Amazon is because of, I want to say that he named it after the Amazon River. And that was it.
Really?
Yeah. I remember when it was just a book company that nobody thought would take off, too.
Yeah.
We were selling books online and shit.
And here we are, and Amazon stands the risk of, or I say the risk to us anyway, of becoming the world's first real megacorp. And the second that it does, we have descended into the cyberpunk dystopia, y'all.
Yeah. And this is actually surprisingly on topic too. And I was going to say, because it all ties in. Let me break it down here, right? What keeps all the harm happening against Indigenous people right now, well, not all the harm, there's a lot of facets, but resource exploitation is a huge one. They force people, like, they forced us on like little parcels of land all across the North American island, but the spots they had us had like really good resources. Like, if you look at what happened in Dakota and like how much resources they had there and like what went on with the Black Hills, like, it's non-stop. Anytime they find something on native land, it's dispossess them, build a fucking dam, like, flood a pipeline through. It's reserve land is like 0.02% of all land in Canada, and yet it's always under attack somehow. Fucking fancy that.
It almost seems like it was intended that way.
Yep. And anytime that, like, say those pipelines want to go through like a rich white affluent neighborhood, they can vote it down in court.
Because they have fucking representation that they've denied other people.
Yep. And it's the dirtiest things ever. And like we were saying on the take that we had done before the recording didn't take, I'm reading a book now called Drumbeat that is as old as I am. And it talks about a whole bunch of different battles in it. And when I was reading through the index and what was going on in it, it was like reading a modern day newspaper. It was like the Wet'suwet'en and Gibbonton people filing a historic court injunction. And like Prime Minister Trudeau, it was Elliot Trudeau, not Justin Trudeau, but it's his father. He was even the guy in charge when this was happening, right? And it's like, not a single fucking thing has changed on the Canadian government relations level other than shutting down the residential schools in 1996. However, the kicker that a lot of people don't know, have you heard of the 60 scoops?
No.
Oh my God. They literally would go to communities, steal children, and drop them off in random cities and give them out to other people in adoptions and stuff. Like, I heard a story from somebody about this one kid who got scooped when he was real young, and he grew up with a family across the line in the States. And when he got older, one day he was eventually like asking his family, how come my skin color is different than all of you? How come I look different, right? And they wouldn't give him a right answer. So he left because he could tell something was wrong. And he eventually found his way up across the border here and found his people and ran into somebody who was like, hey, I think I know who your family are, you know, and actually got him back to his community. And he doesn't speak the language, but he actually got to go back finally, you know, stuff like that actually happens. So like, it was a huge thing. And the scoop never ended, right? And they were scooping babies well before the 60s. So there's a thing that they're talking about now, they're calling the Millennium Scoop, because there's more Native kids in foster care in North America, or sorry, in Canada, than there ever has been in all of history. Like,
really?
Even in my family, there's a kid who's in foster care. My cousin Jess, her kid, she's homeless in I think it's Winnipeg she lives, and she had a kid and didn't want to raise her and gave her up for adoption and left the hospital rather quickly after giving birth, apparently. And I didn't even find out about this until like 2 years after, right? Mm. When the kid was already in adoption services, right? But like, there's tons of times where it's not like, actually, who's to even say what happened with my cousin? Because I haven't spoken to her since I was like, I don't know if I even saw it 2012 when grandpa died.
It's been a while.
It's been a very fucking long time. I haven't seen some of my cousins since I transitioned, even mm-hmm. Riley and Jess specifically. But like, yeah, like even in my family, we have a kid who's in adoptive services, right? And she's going to be for the rest of her life. You know, one of my best friends is an adopted Métis child, you know, like it happens a lot. And a lot of the time the children are taken away from the parents illegitimately by like racist social workers or nurses who like they'll give a woman an epidural for childbirth and then use that as a reason to take her child away because she seems like she's drugged up.
What?
And that's all it takes. Yep. That'll happen.
All of this goes back to that same thing. And it's still happening. It's just like you say, mm-hmm. It is still happening. And what you're looking at across the board is how, and look at it from the viewpoint of someone who is a colonizer and who actively fucking hates you. How mm-hmm. do you get rid of a culture that you fucking hate? How do you do it? You can't kill all of them. You can't get away with that nowadays.
Right.
But what you can do is isolate children and deny them their own culture. And that's how the residential school started. It was you are taking all of these children for, if you've seen the artwork for this, it's fucking terrifying. This started in the late 1800s. I want to say that the residential school started what, like 1850 or a little after, something like that.
You but actually would have looked it up. I didn't look it up when it started, actually.
But the residential school specifically started around that time, and there was only artwork.
1831.
I was off. Fuck.
Wait, when is it?
So I'm looking at. I actually went through your Facebook feed, Sophia, and I pulled up a couple articles because you've been posting a lot of stuff.
I have.
There was a sort of like a on May 31st, the Bearskin Lake First Nation put out a press release of some sort, talking about this, and basically said in total over 130 residential schools operated in Canada between 1831 and 1996. In 1931, okay, so at the height of the residential school system, 80 residential schools were operating across Canada.
Okay, and contact was in 1492, I believe.
Yeah, they couldn't do enough damage between then and then, so they had to start the residential school program. And then the scoops, where you are taking children away from their culture of origin, and like the residential schools, like I was about to say, they denied them access to their language or their practices. They had to act white. And then you've got that going on. And then after 1996, of course, they know they can't get away with that anymore. So you have the scoops happening. And that's the same shit wearing a different coat.
Now you want to hear something that's even fucking more sinister? They straight up sterilize Indigenous women in hospitals without their consent.
Really?
Yep. They'll sneak it in on some forms that they didn't know or that shouldn't have been there. Or sometimes they won't even have consent at all. It absolutely still happens for sterilization. It's an actual fucking thing.
It is. And it's hit the news not that long ago. And in the news case or the news story that I remember reading, it had to do with they excused it as it being a language barrier. What the fuck?
A language barrier. Do you want us to rip out your reproductive organs? Yes or no?
How does that even work? How can you excuse that as a language barrier?
She was from a remote community and she didn't speak English. And so they said, well, you know, we indicated to her that we were going to sterilize her. And she seemed to agree. Meanwhile, she's in a strange fucking place surrounded by people that she knows don't fucking care for her.
Why would you even give someone the option to be sterilized out of nowhere?
Because you don't want her to have any more kids, because that solves your problem. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's fucking ridiculous.
I find it interesting. If you look at humans as, you know, as animals, right? So, like, dogs look at other dogs and they're like, oh my god, you're a dog, I'm a dog, we're all dogs, right? Cats look at each other, I'm a cat, you're a cat, we're all cats. Like, humans, we have this bizarre, I guess, talent, gross talent, that we can look at other humans and go, you're not a human. You're not like me. I'm different than you. I'm better than, I'm a different kind of human. I almost feel like we do this thing like we make different subspecies of human or something like that, like in our own minds. Like, Fish, you mentioned it before in a previous episode, like how we categorize, how the brain constantly tries to categorize and compartmentalize and, you know, create patterns and stuff.
And, pattern seekers.
Yeah, and I think about that, like, I just think what it comes down to is, like, you know, the society has programmed a lot of people to really, 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 truly, truly believe that their type of human is the best. And it's like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all, because fundamentally, like, we're the same. Like, we're the same types of, you know, body, like, the organs are the fucking same, you know? It just doesn't make any sense.
Everything is the same, essentially.
Yeah, it's all the same.
Like, local adaptations and the amount of melanin you have are the only fucking difference.
Exactly. Like, it's all the same. And I can't wrap my head around it.
It's bizarre, too, because so many folks don't... They're not conscious that they feel that way or that they have that internal bias. They don't think about it. These are the same people that tell themselves they are good people.
Yeah.
Some of them are even call themselves allies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know,
some of them are my parents. So
yeah. it's a matter of dividing the dividing lines. And some of it is likely hard-coded into us because we have adapted across the entire fucking planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you adapt, when you climb down from the trees, when you start changing your diet and you start changing the world around you and walking upright and making noise that equates to words and whatnot, you become and you become tribal in an anthropological sense.
Mm-hmm.
And as your family group and your group that you are related to meanders around, you're going to encounter other groups that are from other places. And it's this is not by any means excusing this, because we are smart motherfuckers.
Right.
We have dominated this fucking planet, whether or not we deserve to. But we have no awareness of how we group up and how we see people as the other. We don't acknowledge it as something that's not really hardwired into us. It's not instinct, but it is something that we tend to do. Like, mm-hmm. It's bizarre that people are not more aware of that and they don't try to be cognizant of it, because,
you know,
I mean, and a lot of it has to do with exposure too. Like, if you expose someone, a kid especially, to a bunch of different people with a bunch of different backgrounds, they don't see that otherness as much. They don't. And that's how you fix that's how you fix a bigot. That's how you fix a homophobe. That's how you fix a fucking racist. Exposure. Make them get to know the people that they think they're better than, that they think they hate, and expose them to those cultures and show them those lives and have them live alongside those lives and walk alongside those people. You quit being such a tall fucking poppy when that shit happened. Right. But how do you make that happen is the fucking problem.
Without injury to the people too, because exactly. Very often when that happens, like any type of de-radicalization work, it really puts those people in danger, you know?
It's all the stress on them too, because then suddenly they're, oh, I have to be the teacher for this person who can't be fucked to learn on their own. I have to answer every dumb fucking question. I have to do all of this stuff. It's like, and they just end up answering the same shit every day. And all these questions are offensive. And all these questions are hurtful in some ways, because these are people that have generational fucking trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have to, and they should not be expected to teach your ass these things that are part of history and are documented. Everybody knows about them. And if you don't know about it, you can go find it. We have more access to information now than any other generation before us. since we came down from the fucking trees, our ability to reach out and get information is at current peak. So, like, there's no excuse for you not to do it. You're carrying something that has more computing power than what put us on the moon in your back fucking pocket.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it, you're right, it does put a lot of stress and burden and harm into these communities, because, like, they have to sit there and weather all that. Deal with every dumb question and every rebuttal, and
it's very similar to being a queer person, you know, like, yes. It's very similar to, you know, it's Pride Month, you know, us recording this, it's Pride Month, and all I keep seeing are all these things of, like, you know, visibility, be visible, visibility, 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 and I'm like, yes, on one hand, I understand that visibility, representation, I understand that that is so important, because if you hide, then people don't know you're there, then people are not forced, quote-unquote forced, whatever. You're forcing people to interact with you. Hey, I'm queer. Hey, this is me. You know what I mean? Like, you have to understand this is the type of, you know, this is who I am. But at the same time, being visible is also very dangerous because of what can happen because you're visibly different from the norm. And It's hard to deal with that. And I think sometimes that's what keeps people reserved.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, they may have, like for instance, the when a lot of those George Floyd protests were happening, Philly had, you know, Philly, we had curfews for a while. You know, we had a lot of protests going on, mostly down in, you know, our center city area. But, you know, there was some activity, you know, even up in my neighborhood. And while I believed so, like, that man should not have died, right? Obviously, he should not have died. He was murdered. He was literally murdered by a police officer. And I believe in that cause so much, but I was not at those protests. I wasn't. And I wasn't because I didn't feel safe. And I feel like a huge asshole for saying that. Because, well, look, a guy lost his life. You know what I mean? And he obviously wasn't safe. It's just, it makes me feel guilty, I guess, like, when I believe so deeply in human rights, you know, humans have the right to be humans. You know, we fucked ourselves up by creating the type of society that we have. You know, we really fucked up. And it just, it's hard to deal with those feelings of guilt. Like, I'm not the type of, I'm not built for a protest. Like, I'm just, I'm not built for it. But what I am built for is sharing information or doing magic. That's what I'm built for, but I'm not built for the boots on the ground kind of situation. Yeah. And it's just, how do you reconcile, I guess, you know?
Yeah, I've got some stuff too, so let's just go for it.
I'll jump quickly because mine won't be super duper long and it'll segue into what Fish is naturally going to say. Everybody's got their own personal talents on what you're good with, right? I do encourage people to show up to protest sometimes, even if you don't feel safe. It's one thing if you're not physically able. That is an entirely different thing. Like, say tear gas is going to kill you. Don't go. Just don't go. It's not worth you dying, right? But if you're somebody who fears for your safety but doesn't necessarily have, like, physical limitations going, I invite you to go, because for the communities who are doing this, it's not an option. It's self-defense.
Right.
Right? It's life or death. And the ability to sit back is a massive execution of privilege. Right? So if you do have a very real reason to not be there, I understand that, and I'm not going to tell anybody to put themselves in the firing lane unnecessarily. You definitely got to help out some other way with how your talents work, right? Like, say you're somebody who has like thousands upon thousands of followers on Instagram, and one shared post reaches like 50,000 people. You can do a lot of news with just one post. Now, you absolutely shouldn't stop there. You can donate. You absolutely should be educating yourself. Like, I think...
Make a supply run. Like, if there's, like, a camp, you know, kind of set up or something like that. Or
run a medic station.
Or get involved locally. Yeah, there's so many things you can do. Like, for example, even, like, Food Not Bombs. Do you know how much it actually helps out marginalized people to have people just, like... feeding homeless people, right? Because almost always homeless people have some form of demographic that affects them to not fit into society in a very mainstream way, you know? Right. So like there's a million ways you can help out as much as your creativity can allow you. The only thing that I see as unacceptable is pretending it's not happening, or like worse, being like oppositional to the movement, you know?
Right.
Because like the time to give the land back and actually like change our ways has come, because hey, guess what we got coming? Global fucking warming, and no amount of like trying to drum up World War III or whatever bullshit the fucking governments are thinking of next is going to stop it, you know? Like, we really need to get our fucking shit together and do this, you know? Yeah. We don't have another option.
So, yeah, you called it when you said what I was gonna say, but I've actually got, I got more here. I got more here. Because BLM taught us a lot of shit.
Mm.
It did. Now, for my part, my wife caught COVID right when COVID got here. She caught it early March.
Damn.
Nearly killed her. And so I couldn't go to the rallies physically. I couldn't go and walk and march, because if I brought it home to her again and we didn't know anything about the potential immunity of it.
Right.
You know, what if I'm killing my fucking wife? We ain't doing that. Mm-hmm. However, what you can do, here's an ass load of shit that you can do to help people that are on the ground, boots on the ground. You can keep an eye on the news. You can keep an eye on tickers. You can keep an eye on local subreddits. You can watch the numbers.
Police
scanners.
You can
listen to police scanners. Those are almost always freely available. You can listen to news broadcasts in areas. You can do Overwatch. That's what I did. An assload of Overwatch. Mm-hmm. Get everybody there. And when you're going to a protest like this and you expect somebody might snatch your phone, you have to lock your phone up, obviously. But you can also run different apps like Glimpse, where you have real-time GPS tracking. You can, a person with that link can see where you are on the ground. So like every night for months, I was just watching little dots travel around different parts of the fucking map and keeping an eye on things. You can give them suites of software, like the ones that automatically upload video as it is taken, so that if your phone gets yeeted out of your hand and broken, that video is still there. You can info blast across social media. I spun up a Twitter that has thousands upon thousands of fucking followers that I don't use for anything now. All its purpose was just releasing shit. Like, you can go out and do all of these things. Set up a med station. Help resupply med stations. Go out and grab water. Because availability of fucking food and water when you're on the ground is nuts. Like, you don't have anything. So just having somebody run in and provide you with a gallon jug of water, or help you clean the fucking gas out of your eyes, or the mace out of your eyes, or help pick somebody up who got hit with a non-lethal round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, anything. You don't have to be one of the dudes out there beating shields and throwing bricks. You don't have to be that person. There's a reason that there's a whole ass support class.
Yeah.
In any fucking game, whether it's tabletop or MMO, be the support class, because that's
which
what
I generally play actually.
Yeah. Like, there's so much you can do. And woo wise, there's also an ass load of stuff you can do. You can ward up your friends, you can ward up people going out. You can try to prevent hot spots and sudden skirmishes from happening and try to draw the eyes of law enforcement somewhere else by way of magic. You can just like start working that synchronicity, start twisting in ways that help your friends and help this cause. You can weaponize everything that you do magically for this thing. Protect your friends, protect the people that are out there doing the good work. And don't just rely on the woo, though, because woo very rarely will work on its own. You have to make causal pathways for anything like that to work. And those causal pathways can be protecting your friends from halfway across the U.S. as you watch them walk around fucking Portland. It can be being a vehicle, so that being on call, so that if somebody gets hurt, they can call you and you drive over, grab them in the back seat and get them to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It can be any number of things. It can be throwing money at the problem and throwing money at the protesters and making sure that they have the funding to get the things that they need as they need them. Making sure that documentarians out there and journalists out there, and that's the thing that every single movement needs. You need as many people with fucking cell phones out and cameras out as you can. Because if there's no documentation of what happened, who is the media going to believe? Okay. You have to be able to document. And that's part of the reason that some of the crazy ass shit that came out during BLM came out, because there were people that always had their phones up and always had their cameras up.
Yeah. Like the cops that they planted in. Some of the groups. Ones that
were protecting the fucking Proud Boys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting them SIM cards, making sure that you can swap out their SIM cards or get them battery packs, getting them, providing a charging station, fucking anything. There are so many things that you can do. And the irony of the Overwatch thing is that I learned that shit playing Ingress. But
wow.
yeah, like it's amazing the things that you learn playing a dub GPS game that are suddenly very applicable for an actual real life fucking movement. But there are so many ways that you can contribute to any fucking movement. And sometimes you just have to look at every single one of them and look what the bottlenecks are. If the bottleneck is money, send them money. If the bottleneck is voices on the internet and documentation and info blasting, be that person. Like it's something that everybody can get involved in and should get involved in. Like, you should be weaponizing your social media anytime this shit happens. Make sure everybody knows about it and cannot fucking forget about it. Because that's the reason people go to social media, is to look at cat memes and porn and forget all the bad shit happening. But when there's bad shit happening, nobody can afford to forget about it.
Yeah, and sometimes they unfollow you, though, which is the real unfortunate thing. And also, I notice how much the algorithm fights against you, too, when you're posting this stuff, you know?
Yeah, like, now if you mention COVID, like, in a post, like, Facebook will be like, did you fact check your COVID, blah, 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 like, it'll prompt you or something like that before you
I love
that
they can manage to do that, but they can't unfuck all the fascies on Twitter and Facebook.
Right, like,
everywhere.
You know, hey, you mentioned the word, you know, Nazi in there, so you might want to, you know what I mean? Like,
hey, you balls out wrote the N-word. Can you fucking not? Yeah. And they can do it. Like, apparently Twitter, and this is something that that comes up every little while, because of laws in Germany, and in France, I believe, if you put, it was discovered that if you have yourself listed location wise on Twitter as being in Germany, Twitter is completely capable of filtering out every single piece of Nazi fascist garbage from your feed. The reason that they don't do that everywhere else is that when they did, the algorithm couldn't determine the difference between a Nazi or a fascist.
And a Republican.
And a Republican, yeah. But
there is,
like,
none.
They completely have the capacity to cut back on all of these things happening and cut back on all of this fucking vitriol being posted online. They just fucking don't. But they'll focus on COVID.
But no, there it is right there. But that it really does expose the whole heart of it. If you can't tell the difference between a Nazi and a Republican, like, if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it's a fucking duck, okay?
Yeah, and we've been and we dealt with that with 4 years of a president that was, you know, just charlatan rape, whatever. He's a horrible person. Anyway,
I'm going to say this. You want to know how they knew? A lot of people knew that the whole Capitol Hill riot was going to happen. It wasn't because they had crystal balls. It's because he met 14 characteristics. Those 14 characteristics are identified in fascist leaders all around the world, and he met all 14 of them. So when people were saying this was going to happen, it was like having an expert opinion. You know, if you've done something long enough, you can just hear it and be like, oh, yeah, that's going to happen. Right. Like, I can hear a certain saw and be like, oh, I know what that one is, because I worked in construction. Right. I hear an air nailer and I'm like, oh, yeah, I know what they're firing. Like, it's your business. Right. And people who study, you know, fascist leaders around the world were saying this is what's going to happen. And then suddenly people are like, we couldn't have known. But no, everybody knew it was going to happen, right? It's just a matter of choosing to fucking ignore it.
And that's the thing. Everybody fucking knew it was going to happen. Everybody knew, especially if you're American and you're even slightly left or lib or prog. Mm-hmm. Like, looking at his moves leading up to it, and I was railing about this on Facebook to the point that half my family fucking unfollowed me, where I'm like, y'all, he's preparing for a coup. He's going to try it. He's actually dumb enough to fucking do it. And then toward the end of, I want to say, no, it wasn't the end of November. It was toward the end of October. You started seeing people being like, yep, early January, it's going to go down. It's going to go down. Go on Parler. Go on Parler and find the information. Where we go one, we go all. Blah, 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 blah. QAnon bullshit. Speaking of QAnon, this is going to be old by the time that this gets aired, but apparently there's been an intel report that warns that QAnon ain't done.
Oh,
they're still up on their bullshit. And
I thought
it's just
so.
Getting...
I didn't think they disbanded or anything. Like,
no,
I didn't think
they fucking didn't. They didn't. They just gotten weirder, and you know they're, you know, still doing the same shit they're doing, where they're moving the goalposts and coming up with weird ass narratives. They're basically a doomsday cult at this point, but they have been for a long time. They're just a doomsday cult, and it's the same. Like in the 80s, like we used to see. Like these churches that would sell all their possessions, and I'm not even talking like Jim Jones shit, but like these whole churches that would decide the end was coming behind a, you know, a pastor. He'd be like, the end is coming on X day. And then when it didn't come, they would move the goalposts. And then when they reached those goalposts and it didn't happen, they'd move the goalposts again. And the fucked up part about it, and this is why you've still got so many people drinking, you know, the QAnon Kool-Aid, is that no matter how many times somebody moves the goalposts, there are still going to be people that are fucking frothing at the mouth, devoted. They are fucking zealots of whatever this thing is.
It's like, the sunk cost fallacy.
It is sunk cost. It's straight up sunk cost.
You want to go over what that is? Because you can explain it.
Yeah, I actually do not know what that is, so I'm curious.
Sunk cost is a cognitive distortion. And essentially what sunk cost says, but it's a fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
But so you've already invested so much time or money or, you know, resource, insert resource here. It's how do I describe this? You've put so much time and energy into X thing that even if it comes out that X thing is completely fucked and wrong and off base and will have no returns, you know, of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you've been here for so long. Might as well keep going, because it can't be that wrong, because you've been here for so long and you can't possibly be that mistaken. It's
when you believe your own bullshit.
Yeah, essentially. I wish that I could break it down better. I can't brain as well as I usually do.
No, that was actually, I mean, it really was a good breakdown, because there's a ton of groups like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, if you get caught up, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, especially when the idea that they move the goalposts, and you see it a lot with those like doomsday type cults, you know, like, oh, the world's going to end. Oh, well, it's going to end now. Oh, it's going to end now. And you would think after a while, these people would drop off and be like, okay, well, you're full of shit, dude. Like, the world has not ended like 16 times ago. So why is it going to end, you know, on time 17? But they don't. They don't think that. They're just in it. or they're just in it too deep. It's like when you're in too deep, I suppose, in a way.
Yeah.
It is. And like, I could probably talk all fucking day about, you know, cognitive distortions and fucking fallacies and the concept of rational choice and the whole bygone principle concept. But in general, what it comes down to is that if you've been invested in some crazy ass bullshit, like, you know, oppressing an entire population of people who existed on a nation before you did, or, you know, pushing somebody else's fucking politics, once you've been involved in it for as long, and you know you're in there for the long fucking haul, even if you realize that you are an absolute piece of shit for doing it or for perpetuating it, well, fucking, you know, wild. You've been at this so long, it's change, and change is bad,
right?
Yeah, to acknowledge this and do anything about it would be to completely upheave everything that I have ever done with my fucking life. Why would I ever do that? Well, I mean,
it's laziness in a way.
It is. It's laziness, and it's risk. It's being adverse to risk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because what if the change is bad?
You're just playing it safe. You're just constantly playing it safe. Even if safe is bad, it's better still even to play it safe.
Even if safe gets other people killed. Right. Thousands of people. Like, that, it's a whole ass thing. We should talk about it sometime. But
I think we could actually dedicate an entire episode to that, so I'd be totally down for that. Absolutely. Kind of what I was thinking of is, I've been kind of thinking about, like, all these different movements right now, you know? You see, there's a lot of, I guess, catchphrases, buzzwords, words, titles, whatever, you know, Stop Asian Hate, Black Lives Matter, you know, land back, you know, things like that. And there's these sort of like, there's these ideas, right? And I think what sort of bugs me a little bit is that people think that they're all about different things. And yes, they are about different things. But if you really break it down of what these movements are really standing behind, okay, Stop Asian Hate. Well, stop, you know, perpetuating violence against Asian people. Black Lives Matter. Again, stop oppressing Black people. You know, take the land back. Stop taking Native people's land. It's stop being shitty to other people. Stop being shitty to people. Stop it. So, I kind of wonder if in order to achieve what we want to achieve with society, because we can't continue like this. I mean, we can continue like this. We can. It's not going to be good, but we can continue like this. So if we want to sort of, you know, change, you know, we want to be the start of that movement to make this huge upheaval and this huge change, I feel like those movements have to come together, and it has to be like a humanity movement, you know what I mean? And I don't want to sound like I don't see color and people, you know, like it is horrific what we have done to each marginalized group of people in this country. It's horrific and it's awful. But I think the only way in order to achieve progress overall may be for all of these movements to come together as one.
Well, here's a few thoughts. I don't necessarily think that they need to come together as a unified thing, because when you unify a lot of individual groups like that, you're basically trying to get all of them to share the same space, and a lot of the nuanced detail that's important gets lost. What right. you need is lateral support, right?
Like all a of collective.
So in terms of lateral support, that's a thing, and it's very fucking effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not bringing Jewishness to the table here,
mm-hmm.
even though that is something that is sitting at the table as I am sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
But the concept of lateral support is a thing that you see in movements that help defend Judaism and help defend people who practice Islam, and in a lot of the early pushback against the, you know, the white straight Christian, you know, we hate anything that, you know, isn't as white as a loaf of bread and
isn't as white and straight as us,
calls God by any other name.
Yeah.
you know, having lateral support from other minority communities and other embattled communities is fucking important. And that's something that you see more and more now in the age of like crowdfunding and online campaigning and all these things are, you know, back when a whole bunch of mosques were being fucking vandalized.
Right.
Massive groups of Jewish folks were like, no, fuck that. Fuck everything about that, you know? And then when the rise of anti-Semitism, or, you know, this recent wave of anti-Semitism in the last 5 or 6 years happened, it was the Muslim community that came and were like, no, we're not going to let you do that to our bros. We're not going to let that fucking happen. Mm-hmm. Having lateral support is healing in a weird ass way, but it is healing. You know that there are other people out there who aren't you, who don't look like you, who don't believe like you, who don't, you know, do anything like you, but they know, you know that they've got your fucking back, you know, and it's not really circling the wagons and becoming a collective. And I don't think that's a good idea, Sophia was saying, but knowing that you've got all these other folks in your corner. Yeah. And even if they've got their own shit going on and they've got their own fights going on and everybody has their own fight, but knowing that they're there for you anyway, like that, that's powerful. Like that's healing to me. Like that gives me hope in a lot of weird ass ways. It really does.
See, I'm not involved in a lot of like, I guess groups like that, you know, like I'm not involved in a Black Lives Matter group or, you know, I'm like, or anything like that. So I don't know what they talk about behind the scenes. All I see is what they do when they're in front of cameras, when they're out in public, you know what I mean? That's, or what they post on social media. So I only see, you know, the things that, it's no different than this podcast in a way, you know what I mean? The people only see what we put out. They don't see everything that we talk about behind the scenes, everything that we do behind the scenes. And so, you know, I would hope, you know, that these different groups, I guess behind the scenes, you know, have a sort of web in which they're interconnected and support each other. Because I think that's really the only way that any progress is going to be made, you know, because if you have Black Lives Matter fighting with, you know, Stop Asian Hate, well, really, where the hell are we going? You know what I mean? Like, so I guess
it's a waste of resources on a lot of levels, and it doesn't really help anybody.
Yeah.
Like there need to be channels of communication open at the very least.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that way, you know, these different groups can kind of have a really good way to communicate with each other, because that's the only way that anything really survives in the long run is having, you know, a place for people to talk. That's what we do.
Yeah.
The other thing is making sure that when one marginalized group gets threatened, everybody gets their fucking boots on.
Right, and like everyone stands behind that group, you know, like whatever group is in the spot, like in the target, I guess, you know, that's everyone else has to stand behind.
It's like, you know, if you swoop for Black Lives Matter, everybody else is coming for you. The queers are coming for you. The Asians are coming for you.
Mm-hmm. And I think what it is, especially being queer is so interesting, because being queer is not limited to race or ethnicity or anything like that. That is just a thing. Like that's what you're born with. That's what you are. No cultural influences about it. Whatever. It's just you. That is you. And I always it's why I never understood things like racism within the queer community or sexism within the queer community. I never understood that, you know, that sort of infighting type stuff.
As somebody who dates, I have to put up with more racism than I have put up with that, like transphobia, straight up.
Really?
Yeah. It's so much more fucking common for people to be just fucking completely racially unaware about Native people, Métis people, Indigenous people in general. Like, I can't even explain it. I've literally even had people on dating apps be like, oh, can you teach me? And it's just like,
fuck.
No. Read a fucking book or look at a podcast? Like, there's so much out there. It's not even hard, okay? if a disconnected person like me can go out and learn a whole bunch of shit through podcasts and books, you can too. It's not inaccessible, you know? And a lot of it's not even like behind a pay barrier, because a lot of Native people want their stuff out there for their people to find, right? But that said, if you can pay for it and you're not Native, you absolutely should. Just saying.
Well, I mean, and the queer community occupies a really interesting space, because we aren't an ethnicity. We aren't a group with a common culture verging back, you know, past, you know, however many fucking decades,
right,
there's been a community to speak of.
Queer is just so broad, you know?
Yeah, we all come from different roads. We all come from different walks. We all come from different cultures and regional groups of our own. Like, we're not hard-coded to be, like, the great savior. We're not hard-coded to be the ones who understand everything. We are human beings with fucking flaws, just like everybody else. And prejudices in a lot of ways, and misunderstandings and ignorance. And we are our own. And this is, again, using it in a sociological context. We are our own tribe, but we are not infallible. We are not automatically hard-coded to be understanding of everyone. You know, the only thing that all of us have in common is that we are, you know, hard-coded to not be heterosexual,
right,
and not identify with the gender of our birth. So like there are going to be shitholes in every community. There are going to be shitholes in ours too, and you know, there's actually more likelihood of there being more within our community, within our tribe, as it were.
But I think it's...
We don't have that homogeny.
But I think what's kind of interesting is, like, so if I'm interacting, you know, if I'm talking to someone who is Black or Asian or something like that, and they're telling me about the things that they've experienced, I can't relate, okay, because my white privilege, like, I have white privilege. I've never experienced what they've experienced. However, if that person is queer, regardless of whatever culture, ethnicity, religion that they are, I can relate to them on some level. Like, I can relate to them on, like, a unique level that not every person can. And I just think that it's just such an interesting thing being queer, because it's sort of like... I don't know. It sort of supersedes maybe most things, because, like, you could talk to someone, whatever, and you just, the fact that, like, when a queer person interacts with another queer person, there is this level of almost, like, safety and understanding that I get, generally. That's usually, like, my first kind of feeling. Like, if I'm talking to someone, I meet them, you know, whatever, and, you know, they kind of let on that they're queer, and you kind of instantly feel like, oh, you're cool. You know, like, you kind of feel...
There's an instant report to it, yeah.
Yeah. You kind of feel like, all right, you're cool. Like, I could trust you, I feel. You know, like, this could be cool. So, I think it would be... I just think it would be wild if... I don't know. We could sort of radiate that sense into humanity overall. Like, just this idea of, like, we're all fucking people, and, like, these differences, we've created them, you know what I mean? We've created these categories for no reason. We've done this to ourselves.
Right. I had a whole fucking thing I pre-planned to talk about that totally just reminded me about that might help. So, everything that goes on with racism and all of that, that's hard built into society, right? Like, racism comes from the top down. And why that is, in my personal opinion, is it's kind of how a lot of countries start, right? Like, in North America, things were a little bit different prior to colonization, right? Like, there was a bunch of different indigenous nations, and a lot of them, like, sure, we fought amongst each other, but there wasn't, like... hard boundaries and borders like there was in Europe. You know what I mean? Like, there was a lot of people would have shared lands and they'd travel through certain areas, and there was a lot more coming and going. So things was really different, and there wasn't like centralized power structures, even though there were like confederacies like the Haudenosaunee, which we talked about in one of the other episodes, right? Mm-hmm. And when you deal with countries on another and like developing them, what essentially happens when you make a country is you take a certain stretch of land and you homogenize the people within that area through a monopoly of violence, right? Mm. And that's essentially what happens in a lot of feudal systems, is whoever is able, usually one of the biggest clans, is able to, through force or whatever means, like say guile or trade monopoly, they establish themselves as the owners of land, right? And when you do that, you take away other people's identities on some degree. You have a lot of shared identities, but what happens with these people is they become subsumed and become serfs, because right, they don't have their own land. They work a parcel of it for you, and therefore they become your citizens, right? And it's a way of taking humans and land and treating it as though it's yours, and using them like their cattle to work it, right? Because you can't really force hunter-gatherers, and I don't even want to reduce indigenous people to hunter-gatherers, right? Because that seems so European to look at it. Like, the society was so advanced that everybody were living in harmony with nature for so long. Like, the buffalo weren't depleted until white people came over and started like trying to kill them to drive out native people's food source, right? So what happens when you generate a country is you start everything from the ground up with violence, right? And the only way that you can continue it is through a monopoly of violence. And unless the families, and you know, Europe had a lot of like assassinations and a lot of like mm-hmm. royalty bloodline shit that I am not going to pretend to understand, because I don't give a fuck about that.
Yeah.
But and it's lengthy. But yeah, when you have so much violence that's exerted over people for so long, and you have people who are used as cattle so intergenerationally, you become collectively traumatized to a point of forgetting, and you enact the same inhumanities done onto you onto other people. And because the cycle's been going on for so long, people are completely unaware of it, and they just shrug their hands and say, well, that's the way it is. But it's not the way it has to be, and it's not the way it has to continue going, right? It's just this very parasitic cycle of separation, right? You're treating everything as though you're separate from the infinite, from the great spirit, from other people, you know, from the land that you grow up out of, you know. And that's what enables people to destroy it all, is the illusion of separation and the ability to never have to live in it and get your feet dirty because of privilege, right? So what we really need to do is, A, give the land back to the indigenous people of North America, so that, like, I don't even want to pretend like I know what that would look like, honestly.
Yeah, because like, I was actually going to ask you, like, I guess, like, none of us run a country, right? So, like, we really do not know the ins and outs of what it takes to run a country, right? So, mm-hmm. I guess that's, like, some of my questions, like, and I think maybe that's where some people maybe, like, roll their eyes, right? At phrases mm-hmm. like, give the land back to indigenous people, and people go, oh, yeah, okay, like, that's, you know, like, how, like, that's possible. So, like, I guess my question is, I'm just very curious how that could be done. You know, it's not like you just hand the keys to the country to like six, you know, indigenous people such a process. Yeah.
So there's a few things to consider. One, I don't think that settlers are just going to get kicked off of the continent, right, and be displaced. Like, that's a huge settler anxiety, is that people are going to do exactly to y'all what y'all did to them, you know? And I'm just using y'all as a generalized yeah. term here. It's not meant to be pointed at anybody specifically. So, like, what I personally, if I were to just give my imagination of it, I would imagine that it would be a transition, just like anything, just like changing over to solar power instead of oil. You don't do it overnight, but you change cultural shift, right? Mm. First and foremost, you can change who's running the government, right? If government systems already exist the way they do, what you could do is have Indigenous people actually get voted in and govern this stuff in a fair way. And like, it's not going to just suddenly be like, y'all, tyranny, take guns away, make fast food go away. Ah, you know, yeah. Like, you're not going to get kicked out of cities, but we're not going to be continuing to burn coal. We're not going to be continuing to poison the waters. We're not going to be continuing to do nuclear power. And I hate to fucking shit on to like draw that fight there, but nuclear power is not safe in the long term because radiation is fucking devastating when it's not controlled. Look at Chernobyl, right? Like, look at Fukushima. Like, we can't fuck around with radiation. It's absolutely something that can completely destroy us as a species.
It permanently damages the planet for far we permanently do not damages need to be the planet
fucking with it at all. We could get everything we need from solar.
Like, the fact that we have to sit there and try to figure out how to explain to people in 500 years, 1,000 years, 2,000 or 3,000 years, even further, hey, don't go into this fucking place right here because there's radiation, you know, and try to, like, that the entire science and the research based around how to communicate the concept of danger to people who will not speak the same language we speak right now. The fact that we have to fucking invest how many millions of fucking dollars into that should say everything on its own. But so I'm not Native, before I say this, but I've been reading a little bit about the idea of, I say a little bit, I've been reading a lot about this, the idea of returning the land and the land back movement and how it would work. And I've been reading a guy named Russell Means. He was in pursuit of the Republic of Lakota. And, you know, his big thing was, you know, pushing rescind the Treaty of Fort Laramie and return all the land that, you know, that was taken from the Sioux. And that's a good quarter of the U.S. and a significant portion of our oil and petrochemical supply.
Especially the Black Hills.
And Russell Means, the statement was, you can join us and you can be here. You can live here just as you have lived here within reason. Just respect our ways. That's no expectation to eject the people that live there. It's just live by our ways and acknowledge the fact that we are here. We are the stewards of this land. We are the people of this land. You came here. You cannot be held so responsible for what your ancestors did, but you do participate in these systems and you do need to acknowledge that and change. And like, and that, I think when people talk about, oh, land back, you know, they roll their eyes at it. They're not thinking about the practicality and they're not thinking about it as a possibility because it just seems so fucking weird to them. But this is a thing. It is absolutely a thing. Russell Means worked on this for like his whole fucking life.
Yeah, he was one of the leaders of the American Indian movement, and they did a whole bunch of stuff. Like, I can go off about that a little bit because when you said his name, I was like, yeah, because I got his autobiography right next to me, and it's called Where White Men Fear to Tread. I'll put it in the show notes as well. And like, he was one of the people in the group, like, they took over the Bureau of Indian Affairs in America after, like, they refused to acknowledge them and, like, release records on, like, boarding schools and a whole bunch of other stuff. So they, like, seized the building and, like, took a whole bunch of stuff and, like, put it out of order. And, like, then they also, I haven't, like, read it all. I'm still trying to get through it. But they ended up at the Siege of Wounded Knee. For those of you who don't know, Wounded Knee most commonly is referred to as the old massacre with, like, the 15th Cavalry, where they gunned down just a whole bunch of women and children and old people, right? And it was one of the worst massacres in U.S. history, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't hear about is Wounded Knee 2.0, which happened in 1973 when the American Indian Movement went to Wounded Knee. I can't give you the full reasons, honestly. I'd have to go back and read the book, because then it's like a completely different chapter when Russell is in like Nicaragua. My brain is not that good. I didn't write notes for it. But he did a lot for a lot of people. And he was really, really passionate. And he's a very well-known person.
He was. And so the Wounded Knee thing, I don't know a lot about it. It happened before I was born. And I am arguably the oldest person here. Mm-hmm. But it was a standoff. It was an armed standoff between Lakota and a bunch of activists that were helping them and mm-hmm. allies that were assisting them against literally the FBI and state law state. Yeah.
What's it called? The Federal or the Reserve Guard or whatever it's called down there. I can't remember.
Yeah. National they Guard? held out for like 70 days, mm-hmm. 70 wow. days to make a point, to make a point. But yeah, I wish that, and this is weird. So I grew up in Texas, Texas and Louisiana, and I mean my generation, mm-hmm. I guess people who were born in the early 80s and went to public school didn't have a lot of information. There wasn't a lot of information provided to us about the indigenous populations that occupied the Gulf of Mexico, that occupied Texas, or what we now call Texas and Louisiana and everything else. There was not a lot known, or rather I say there wasn't a lot known among us, as in kids.
Right.
We weren't taught hardly any of it. Of course, and we also weren't taught anything about hardly anything about the racism that had happened just 50 years prior, like even 20 years prior, even at that moment, because the part of Texas I'm in is, if you've ever heard of Jasper, Texas or Vidor, Texas, it's in that rough, loose area. So you can imagine how fucked up that area is.
As you're far in as like it. Texas.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. But like I didn't learn about the fucking Tulsa massacre until I was in college, y'all.
Whoa.
How the fuck does that happen?
Whoa.
Yeah. I didn't know about that until I was in college. Whoa. I didn't know about a lot of shit until I was in college. People don't get, and it goes back to that idea of seeing things as being in the far past. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming home, and I was a kid. I was maybe 12 years old, and we had talked about the desegregation of schools. Mm-hmm. And I came home and talked to my mom about it, and it turns out that my mom was one of the folks that got bused over to another school during one of the desegregation efforts in Texas.
Mm.
And she had never talked about it. Uh-huh. And a lot of people didn't talk about it, and I think a lot of this, and this again, this even ties back to the idea that, you know, if you meet another queer person, you have instant rapport because you know some of their struggle. All that it really takes to get over the idea of otherness and that figurative distance between you and somebody else's fucking problems is to find a point of rapport and common ground between you and them. It's just a matter of being willing to fucking do that.
You know, I feel like I've seen in some online, you know, discourse and discussion, I feel like people, like, I guess we'll call it people on the left versus people on the right. So the people on the left are in some cases that I've seen, they're trying to appeal, you know, to this human element, you know, like, imagine if your brother or sister XYZ, you know, like, they're trying to appeal, and these people are just like, hey, I don't give a fuck. Whatever. So what? It's just, It's unsettling.
It is. And it's hard to know where that, because to us on, you know, who are left leaning in some way or mm-hmm. another, it looks like callousness. It looks like deliberate disregard. It looks like the choice to just simply not give a fuck about other people who have lives that are just as vivid and just as complicated and just as colorful as yours are.
Right.
And I run into this a lot. Like, being from the part of Texas I'm from, there's a lot of right libs, a lot of right libertarians, and they essentially are just like, I do not give a fuck about anybody but I and mine. Taxation is theft. Work or die. Work or starve. You know, and it's really weird having conversations with folks that are aligned that way, including one of my fucking siblings, to have this conversation and be like, okay, well, why is this somehow a weird ass notion to you that I want healthcare for you, even if you were to lose your job and lose your insurance and lose your income? Why is this a weird ass radical fucking concept that I want you and your kids to have all these things? And it becomes like Kirk talking to a computer and talking the computer into sparking up and dying back in, you know, original series. It's like you cannot get through to them about that. It's a very solipsist point of view. It's a very self-focused point of view where it's like they are afraid to acknowledge the humanity and the right to exist of other people.
Like it makes them weak.
And the second that it happens to them and they need to go on the dole and do something that's against, you know, those great enlightened, you know, libertarian right politics, you know, they're going to be the ones to do it. And you see that kind of thing, that sort of bias, that distortion and the fallacious process there in a lot of places. Like there was a I don't remember who wrote it. I'll put it in the show notes, but it was the only righteous abortion is my abortion. And it was a discussion about women on the right who would actively fight against Roe v. Wade and fight against abortion rights, but then would quietly go into abortion clinics and get abortions for themselves, thinking that they were the only ones who were really really okay to get it. Like theirs was the only worthy one. And it's the same distortion. It's the same fucking fallacious, that fallacious process.
That's just wild. I couldn't imagine being that self-absorbed. Like, I couldn't imagine being that in my own bullshit. Yeah,
it's really selfish. That is, like, you have to have some kind of, like, spiritual injury going on to be that kind of person, I swear to God.
I usually attribute it to ignorance myself, like, because I mean, it's easy to look at all these people and say that it's malice and say that they're evil and they're hateful. And I'm not trying to defend them by any means,
right?
But I'm the person that wants to swing at the right. I don't want to swing at shadows. I want to swing at jaws. Right. So it's easy to say or believe that they're malicious. And when you get into arguments with them and when you see them spewing their vitriol and doubling down because they've got this weird ass siege mentality, which, you know, if somebody came at you, you probably would too.
Mm-hmm.
When they double down over and over, I don't think that's malice so much as it is ignorance and lack of perspective.
Honestly, and this is going to be my spirit model shining through. I think it's they have an injured spirit, right? Like, living in a colonized world, so many people feel so fucking lonely, and we're stuck doing things we hate in a world that dehumanizes us and pits us against each other, where the people who have it all have everything, and those of us who have little have next to nothing, you know? Like, there's just so much pain. It's so easy to lose yourself in it and just be so self-absorbed. Like, I'm not going to lie, the greatest times I've been insensitive was because I was so absorbed in my own pain, you know? Yeah. And whether you're privileged or not, colonization and capitalism injures us all. And it puts us down to a level where we're less than what we could be, where we're encouraged to constantly put each other down and embody the worst parts of humanity just for our own personal gain, you know? And it's like, that's where it comes from, right? We have this, like, this injury, and whether it's like never being able to feel like you have enough, or never feeling secure in who you are, whatever it is for you personally, it's all of that like neurotic, distorted mental self-image that really drives people to not see other people's pain, because they're either so caught up in the things that distract themselves from the things they're unhappy with, you know, or like something else is going on. Like the amount, there are people who truly do hate and are actively malicious and evil in this world.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There are,
but
there
they are less than 10%.
They are. And when people talk about how, and I want to follow up on this because it's fucking important and it needs to be fucking clarified as much as it can be in as many ways as it can be. When someone says colonization hurts everybody, it fucking does.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of this, if we're talking about, and this is not me saying as a white person, but when you look at the way that things have developed culturally in the U.S., mm-hmm. and I say the U.S., but this also applies to Canada, so North America, you've got, and this is how colonization hurts the majority. This hurts the future generations of the colonizers themselves too, where you've got all these people who have come from different backgrounds, different cultures, different ethnic traditions, different roads, and they have had to leave so much of that behind to come to another place. Well, you get them there, you isolate them, they don't have access to their culture anymore.
Right.
So they're forced to search for themselves. And you see this everywhere. They're going to go out and find themselves. They're going to try to figure out what their purpose in life is. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they have to wonder about half of that shit is because they left their culture across the fucking Atlantic. Mm-hmm. We did. A lot of us did. And so there's this.
That's why you have a lot of that like eat, pray, love kind of, you know, shit. Yeah, going exactly. Out there.
You've got this weird ass like chewing gum, cotton candy bullshit that it has no substance. And, you know, you market because, you know, you've got greed and you've got industry and you've got economics. You market the idea of going out and finding yourself and going down that bucket list and figuring out who you are and going through the phase where you find yourself and you have
capitalism
to cultivate,
has created a whole market around
and then
that.
And then you wrap it up in nationalism. And that's the other thing too. In the absence of having a culture of their own and a set of ethnic traditions and norms and mores and all of these things, you patch up the holes with fucking nationalism. Because I mean, proud to be an American. It's and it's crazy. If you talk to anybody who's not from the U.S. and you ask them, you know, what do you feel? How do you feel about your flag? They're like, it's a fucking flag.
Right.
Whereas we practically worship it. If we're talking about egregores, the American fucking flag, y'all.
Okay. I gotta chip in. The Canadians are not dissimilar. Do you fucking cunts here plaster it all over everything like it's fucking wallpaper? I swear.
Oh, yeah. So Canada's the same about their flag?
Oh my god, people wear it on shirts, yeah. On hats, on watches.
Okay, and in
fucking name it and it'll have a stupid fucking Canadian flag or a beaver dressed like a goddamn Mountie.
And let me guess, they do the same shit that they do in the U.S. So, okay, here you go. You've got a dude who has a faded American flag on his tailgate. His wife wears an American flag bikini. He has a pair of boxer shorts with the American fucking flag on it that he leaves a fucking, what the fuck? That he just fucking ruins, okay? That gets piss on it and gets a fucking streak on the back. But if you show that man a video of somebody burning the American flag, uh-huh. He's gonna lose his fucking mind. Meanwhile, he's farting like shit gas into his. And
I mean,
what
the skid marks in his Merca underwear?
Skid marks, that's the word I was losing.
You got skis in your undies, bro.
I'm grateful not to have had
less of a thing up here because there's this whole conception of like Canadian politeness, which is just the veneer to stifle the just absolute overtones of racism.
Canadians are the second scariest white people to Russians. I'm not gonna lie.
Psychopath levels, y'all. I can't even, like, they will strangle you and smile and then just say, oh no, I don't know what happened. they must have just fallen down the stairs. Like, to quote a residential school survivor who I met, Canadian government is so cruel, they'll sign your life away with the stroke of a pen. Yeah, that's how they'll fucking do it.
Also, like, let me just say, Native Canadians, like Indigenous Canadians, y'all are fucking hardcore. That's why I say that y'all are the second scariest people. But like, damn. But yeah, it's bad, y'all. It is. And I wish I were more fluent and could, you know, orate about this better, but it's very complicated. And unless you have degrees in sociology and in psychology and in political science and in so many other things, it's a hard thing to untangle. And hundreds upon hundreds of books have been written about it, trying to identify it. And likely more will be written, and I hope that they fucking are, because we're in a unique position right now, here and now, where we live 2021, you know, middle of the year, watching kids get dug up out of the dirt. Thousands, and there will be thousands of them, at the very least. Like the most conservative estimate was 3,000. And all these things are coming to light, and you know, all of this pushback is happening both in, you know, in face-to-face interactions and on the internet. And you've got this huge wave of fascism and nationalism that's pushing back against it. Like, we're in a really weird and very unique position to look back along the length of our fucking histories. And maybe we'll figure it out this time, or we'll get a little closer to figuring it out. I fucking hope we do.
We're starting to unpack a lot of our history and why we are the way we are. I mean, look at COVID and the parallels it draws to the flu epidemic. I think it was 1913, something like that. You know, there was a flu epidemic and
the Spanish flu, yeah.
Yeah, Spanish flu. And people then I saw a bunch of articles and pictures resurface of people being like, ah, fuck masks, they're stupid and it's not real and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And
yeah, they did the same shit.
Like, they did the exact same shit. My
great-grandmother lived through that. And, yeah. She's 110. She right. doesn't talk much anymore, but like, one of the few things that she did say about it is, I've seen this shit before. It was basically what she said.
Yeah, she's like, been there, done that. And, yep. You know, and when I was reading that stuff, it was really blowing my mind. But at the same time, I was like, well, this shouldn't be blowing my mind because, you know, this is what humanity does. It just, you know, keeps repeating its own bullshit. But I thought, you know, when COVID started to, you know, when we started to hear more about it, and, you know, it was here, it was definitely here, and it's definitely a big ass problem, I thought, if anything, like, I thought it would be similar to the sentiment that ran through this particular country right after 9/11. In that everyone kind of calmed the fuck down and came together, sort of, because there was a lot of Muslim hate. I'm not gonna say that there wasn't, like, there was a lot, and, you know, just for Middle Eastern people in general, but I will say, like, there's this sort of overall, and I was also a kid at the time, so there's this overall sense of, like, we're gonna get through this horrible thing together, right? And I thought that COVID would have that same sentiment. Like, I thought that, I really, really, really thought that this country could come together and say, hey, this is a terrible thing. It could potentially kill a lot of us. And so we're going to work together to do what we can to make sure everybody doesn't get sick. Because if there's one thing that every human is capable of, is getting sick and dying, right? We can all get sick and die at some point. And so I thought that that would be, like, maybe that would be the thing that would really unify us. And it's so bizarre. It seems to have only just, like, further divided. Or maybe there's a sense of division that the media is creating that's not actually there. I don't know.
I wouldn't say it's the media, but I would definitely say the internet has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. I don't think that there's ever going to be an external event that's going to unite humanity. Mm. We have to do that by choice, because that is a very difficult thing to do. That is something that we have to, as grown fucking mature adults, sit down to the table and discuss together. Like what we were talking about earlier with like how we all kind of need to come together to discuss these things, you know? Mm-hmm. There was that part where I was like, oh, I kind of want to say that teaching, but I can't because I don't really have approval to say it. But essentially what we'd be doing is having all of our cultures like split up, because like right now we're all split around to the corners of the world, right? And right. We'd be kind of coming together at the middle, you know what I mean? Instead of like in our little bubbles, we could actually come as collectives and talk about what our future is going to look like, right? Because we have to do it. There's nope. No other way. We either constantly, the choice is this: either you pass on a cycle of endless misery for your children to live in, or you fucking do something about it. Yeah, that's it.
It is. It's true. And I worry about that. Like, I worry how long that's gonna fucking take. Because yeah. I mean, we all get raised hoping that there's going to be that point. And it was a big thing in the early 90s where, you know, you had the hands, what is it? Fucking
hands around the world,
hands around the world, or hands across America, some shit like that.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody come together right now, all over, you know, and it, when you're young, it always seems like that's the goal. Like eventually everybody is going to just unfuck themselves. Recognize the humanity of other people, recognize that they've been a fuck and that they need to unfuck themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually we're going to get to that point. But more and more as I get older, and I recently turned 40, mm-hmm. more and more what I see is that there's always going to be that. I mean, and you see it on the internet, you see these contrarian ass edgelords that they don't even really believe what they're arguing about. It's just this whole fuck you, I don't do what you tell me, when it comes to human fucking empathy.
Right. You know? And thinking it's cool or something.
And it becomes cool. Their identity, because again, our identities are fucking fractured as fuck because we don't really have them. We have to build them from the ground up, or you just accept what your parents fucking told you. But like there's... It's hard to know how to reach out to those folks and get them to be human again.
Yeah.
I think that magic and what we're doing at DKMU, not to kind of like be like DKMU is the answer, right? But it's kind of an experiment for something that can be an answer, right? Because what we're kind of trying to do is create our own culture there for people who don't have their own. Like we've talked about it at long lengths in the group. There's a lot of people who are like diasporic or mixed racial who don't necessarily have ties to their cultural teachings and feel so incredibly isolated because of it. But because we have a system that we've developed together that hasn't appropriated anybody's culture, that like has been a composite of the shared teachings that people have brought from their own cultures and systems, like it's become something special where people can just kind of roll in and actually work with it. And nobody has to give you approval. There's no gatekeeping. There's no like requirements to do this stuff. You actually have access to something that allows you the keys to your own identity and your own place and your own understanding as a part of something bigger than just this small little narrow self. And like I talked about earlier, when you have that sense of self, you're no longer like trying to pump up yourself to make yourself feel better or special somehow, because you're not disconnected from everything, right? You have a place to be. And I know DKMU is not going to be the place for everybody, but what we're doing is creating a model how people can make their own thing going forward, right? And this is something that's been talked about a little bit, and I might misrepresent this, right? But it's called the hallucination. I'm going to link in the show notes John Trudell. In fact, one of my favorite bands, A Tribe Called Red, they changed their name to the Hallucination. It's kind of like wrong to call them a band because like they're not like playing drum kits and guitars and shit.
A musical group.
Musical artists. Yeah.
And they changed their name to the Hallucination, right? And that's based off of the teachings of John Trudell. And the idea was to have like a nation set up that people could join who didn't necessarily have like a nation to go back to. Because like, for a lot of people who are really disconnected like me, if I don't go to absolute mad lengths, and I am actually going as far as I can on this, to learn every bit of Cree and Métis culture I can, I'm not actually like giving anything to that community that's still living with that living tradition. I'm essentially like a drain on them. I have to go in there, take up space, take up resources, and take teachings, right? And you can't, it's not necessarily fair to ask those communities to take on all the people right now who are mixed race, because they have to preserve their living traditions and who they are, because so much has already like tried to rip it away from them. Trying to take on a million people who are adopted wouldn't be something they can do. Like they can adopt individuals who really show them that they're coming in a good way and embody the teachings, and that would happen on a case-to-case basis. But I can't even speak for that, right? Because I'm not somebody who has that even myself, you know. But the concept of the Hallucination is having a place where those people can come together, and people who have teachings from their other cultures can come, and they can make something new. Because prior to colonization, you weren't forced to stay in a group if it didn't work for you. You had freedom. If your group wasn't working, you could leave with your clan and go form a new people elsewhere, you know. Like, that happened plenty of times. And the idea that we can't do that post-colonization is just a colonizer idea. And if we actually really want to move forward, I think a really good way to do it is to build something together, right? And I don't want to speak for the people who are actually making this happen, because there's like a huge movement behind it, and I only know about it from the outside. I am not involved with it in any way. But I dream of there actually being a place for myself and other mixed Indigenous people who don't necessarily feel like we have a place sometimes, to actually be able to have a nation for ourselves that's built to take us in, to actually give us teachings and ceremonies, and to actually build something together and move forward in a direction without having to erase anybody else's identity. And that's just my interpretation of it. It could be a lot different. I could be misrepresenting it. And if I am, I own that and I apologize for it, but that's how I've taken it, you know. And I think that would be a really good step forward, is to actually try and create something new for all the people here together, to actually decolonize collectively and learn how to be responsible in relation with the people who have been here since the dawn of fucking time, pretty much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and it's true what they say, and this is, I'm from the other side of this situation, but like, sometimes you, even if you have a home you could go back to, it's true what they say, you sometimes can't go home,
right?
Like in my case, and I'm just using myself as an anecdotal example here, but I'm queer. I'm not Catholic. I'm Cajun. I'm a redneck Cajun. Can I go home with a trans wife? Can I go home as a queer woman? Can I go home as someone who is not Catholic and be safe there? No, I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm also Jewish. Am I going to go to fucking Israel? No, I'm fucking not.
Right.
Because the idea of living in a theocracy is terrifying to me. So like, having a place to go when you have yourself become stranger than your home is willing to accept, and have embraced things that your home isn't ready to take, and having a place to go for those folks. And there's a lot of us too. It's like, it providing a place to perch that isn't just a fucking train station. You know, it isn't ever changing.
I've always kind of dreamed of something like that, you know, to kind of like what you both have described. I've always kind of, when I was young, I always thought of like, oh, I would love to have like a piece of land and, you know, have like a community living there, of people who genuinely want to build a community together. You know, I always thought about that. And in terms of like my own culture, like I did that that ancestry thing. And I did it because I was like, well, I don't know anything about my actual family and lineage, because my grandfather doesn't know his biological father. And so it's hard to search and hard to follow the trail. But I know that we're German and Irish and Scottish, and you know, and I was like, all right, well, let me see where in the world, you know, my ancestors came from. And pretty much I'm 50% Scottish and 50% Irish. And I was like, okay. And I really thought that when I did that whole ancestry thing, that like I would feel this connection, right? That I would be like, you know, like, oh, I longed for the British Isles or whatever. And I'd be like, nah.
Yeah, but you fucking don't, right?
Yeah.
I'm good.
I'm more like, I'm from Philly. Like, I identify more with that than I'm Irish and Scottish and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of, you know, thinking what you were saying, Sophia, about PKMU, and it's, you know, you're building your own culture. And that's kind of how I feel about myself and what I'm doing in my own life, is I looked at that and I was like, all right, I'm this, but I don't care, you know, like I don't feel anything. I think I'm so far removed from that land, that culture, that, you know, it almost doesn't apply. I respect it. I respect where I came from, but it just doesn't apply.
It's that loss of identity, because, you know, your ancestors came across the Atlantic, same as mine did.
Right.
And they left behind the home of their birth and the home of their culture, and they could only take so much with them.
Right.
And that's the whole thing. And then you've also got, like, generations of fucking erasure that happened, too. Like,
yeah.
Like, I've been told my whole life, oh, yeah, you've got some indigenous in you. You've got some indigenous in you. No, I fucking don't. I spit in the tube. I found out I'm 10% Haitian Creole, y'all.
Oh, wow. Damn.
But apparently, you know, there are terms that are used in Texas and Louisiana for that. And I'm not going to say them on, the podcast, because they are racist as fuck. But
y'all can use your imaginations.
Yeah. It has to do with wood piles. But it's the erasure that happens too. And it's willful erasure. Mm-hmm. And it's... And I like to look back and think about, or hope, I guess, at least, that it wasn't that generation's choice. Because what it looks like happened was, during Jim Crow, they just decided, oh, hey, you know, we've got this woman who came over from Haiti, who was married into the family, and we want to make sure that everybody is safe. But we're going to say that the reason that her children and her children's children and her children's children's children are slightly darker skinned than the rest of us is that we have some Native American blood in us, because that's safer for our family on the whole. But that woman was fucking erased, y'all. My grandparents had no fucking idea.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. And my great grandmother had no fucking idea. You know, it's insane the amount of erasure that happens, but there's also so much loss that happens. And that's not, we don't have a big fucking struggle, you and I, Jay. We don't.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, it's that disconnect is what kind of breeds some of the weird ass, like, bad actors and shitty movements that happen elsewhere.
It's almost
hard to figure out they ended up.
Like psychopathy of the soul or something like that is almost what it feels like. Because it's like, you don't have a culture. You know what I mean? Like,
you don't have a culture, so you're going to appropriate fucking everybody else's.
Right. Yeah. And trust me, as a young teenager discovering Wicca and all that kind of stuff, I'm sure I've done my fair share of cultural appropriation. And everyone has. But I, you know, I recognize that now, and now, like, I feel really attuned to this idea of just a modern magician, a modern witch. That's really my culture, honestly. Like, if I were to say, like, what is my culture? My culture is I'm a witch. Like, that's I practice witchcraft. I'm from witchcraft. That's really the way that I would just. Where are you from? Witchcraft.
You know? Right. And what Fish said really hit home, because then I started thinking about it, and it's like, my grandpa didn't even like talk at all about any of this stuff, right? Mm. And he would have been pretty fucking native based off of how much I am. And I'm not going to give my quantum because I hate that anyways. Like the whole idea of having to give, it's bullshit. But I did do a test, right? And it's all like Plains native, right? Like Korean Sioux. In fact, the thing I did only tested for native alone, like it didn't test for anything else. So I couldn't even tell you what all the rest of my DNA is, right?
Right.
But like my grandpa, he even had the accent, right? Like he talked like he spoke Michif, but we never heard him say a word of it. And my great grandma, it was his mother, I think. She like swore up and fucking down that we weren't native, and if anybody ever like said that we were, accused that she'd just get like super fucking aggressive and be like, we're fucking Canadian and we're French, you know. And it was always you come from a long line of Canadians, and it's like what Fish was saying earlier, the replacement of nationalism is an identity, right? And I didn't even realize that until later. And it's like the more I started being around other Native people when I was older, like I could see like their wounds were like my wounds, you know, like when they talked about the shit they went through, I just would start crying because it was like them talking about my family, you know,
right.
But, like the way that like there's just sometimes this uncontrollable anger that happens out of nowhere. Like if you're a kid and you fall asleep on a farm and you're like just out and about playing, right? And this is just something I was thinking about, right? And your parent finds you, your parents shouldn't be mad just because they were scared that they couldn't find you, right? But if you're like a kid playing around at a residential school and that happened and say you fell asleep outside, you'd be beaten, right?
Worse.
Yeah. And like how that got passed on and stuff. Like if I was like when I was younger, if I was like out and sleeping in the field or something like that and I scared my parents, I would definitely get yelled at. And like we were pretty strictly punished, you know, and it could have been worse because like my dad had it even worse, you know, and just like seeing how we react and the pain in it, like it's hard not to just have it be real fucking painful sometimes and feel like your whole heart's a scab, you know, and like I just wish I could have known, you know, like I had to get told by somebody who's like, it wasn't even my dad. He like worked with our family for like 25 fucking years by the time he like told me, right? And like I'm also ironically colorblind and I can see less red than other colors, so I can't even necessarily see the fucking color of my skin properly, right? So it's like there's a whole bunch of shit with that, and like it's just so horrible. And like then everyone's like, oh, but you don't have status and genealogy, and like all of that stuff ties into just erasure, right? Because
and it's all sacrifices on the altar of upward social mobility is what it is.
And it's all a matter of just deciding who is and who isn't, right? And I understand, like I stated earlier, you can't expect marginalized group. It's like Métis doesn't just mean like mixed. It's like a very specific cultural identity of like people who were mixed at the certain time and like formed at a settlement around Red River. And like to even be Métis and have status, you have to be able to like trace your lineage, right? And the only reason I even say that is because every single fucking sign points that we're there from like my last name, the land, everything. Like that's I followed the pieces, right? And there's no way to actually like get fucking status or anything like that. And I don't even care about status because that just means recognition from the shitty colonizers, right? Like what does that mean? Like I don't pay taxes, fuck, I don't care. Like that's not something that I'm interested in, right? It's just like what I want is like
reaching for your identity.
Yeah, and healing and connection and like an actual ability to like speak the language and like live in the way that I've always been called to live. Because like even though my family was like essentially raising me white, I always hung out with like a lot of other Native kids, and I caught a lot of stuff by like proximity, right? So like I don't know, you say that like you don't have a struggle with like your identity too, Fish, but you absolutely do, because like Jewish people got it fucking pretty hard too, and like Cajun people, was it Creole? I can't remember. I'm sorry.
Technically, okay, if you are a person of color and you are Cajun, you either call yourself Cajun or you call yourself Creole.
Okay.
But if you are not a person of color, you are generally Cajun or Acadian.
All right. Yeah. And we talked about that.
But I mean, and it's kind of dumb. This isn't even the same level of shit. But one of the ways that, and there's a big resurgence of Cajuns in southern Louisiana and along the, you know, the Gulf of Mexico right now. And they're trying to revive our language. I say our language. It's French, except it's just grunted. For the most part, the Creole language is its own unique animal. It's not Creole is not the same as just Cajun French. Those are two separate things. One has its roots in Haitians and in Haitian French, and it has its roots in African language as well. Mm-hmm. But Cajun French is just Cajun French. It's essentially if you took if you took someone from France who spoke the language as it is written, and then you dump them in Canada and let them stay there for about 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got that drift, and then you've got them heading all the way south to the Gulf of Mexico. You give them a couple of Valium each time. So that's the difference in the language.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this big drive to reach out and try to resurrect what's left of Cajun culture, because in a lot of the schools in that area, you were forbidden to speak Cajun French at all. So the only time kids would learn it generation by generation is at home if their parents did. Mm. It's getting erased. And a lot of that culture for a long time was erased. It was, if Cajun was synonymous with redneck, backwoods, hillbillies, you know, inbred, buck to swamp people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not even on the same level, but it follows the same pattern of that erasure, and then the modern movements to reach and try to grasp what we were and what we could be. And like, I'm not even get into the idea of, you know, being, you know, part of the Jewish diaspora. That's a whole ass other animal, but at least a giant number of our folks survived that. Like, but it's not the same level of shit that indigenous folks in North America and really in South America too, and in Australia have had to fucking deal with. It's not even on the same level, but it does follow that same pattern and those same loose steps. So like, while I can't really know the level of fuckery and pain and trauma, generationally speaking, that someone who is indigenous has had to go through, like, I can definitely kind of see the pattern there.
But, absolutely.
And really, that's all it takes for folks is just finding rapport. Hmm. And going back to what we were talking about, I don't know, even know how long ago at this point.
And actually, we are a little bit over 2 hours. So,
I'm going to be getting like an ass load of emails like I did last time about, wow, this is like full length movie. Why did you do this?
Yeah, people are in it for the long haul with these episodes. I don't think we've done an episode like under an hour and a half in a really long time.
Yeah, we are a long form podcast for sure. And honestly, I was going to say I got to go to bed soon.
Yeah. So does anyone want to kind of do like some kind of concluding thoughts? Anyone kind of want to wrap up a nice concluding statement?
Yeah, there's a lot that you can do. And settlers, nobody is asking you to apologize for your ancestors. In fact, it does no good, and it just requires emotional labor from indigenous people or people of color. So just don't do it. In fact, if you think about doing it, and even think about it, you should donate instead.
But to say sorry is the new hopes and prayers.
Yeah, and it doesn't do a fucking thing, and it doesn't help other than make people have to deal with your fucking regrets. And just fucking don't
burden like, other people with your guilt.
Great,
like quit signaling your virtue and go out and actually show some fucking virtue without announcing you did it.
That yeah, too.
And if you donate, don't put a fucking screenshot on your Facebook about it. If you go to a protest, stop taking a fucking selfie and putting it up to get the social capital. Like, for the love of fucking God, show solidarity in a way that is not selfish for once, for fuck's sakes.
Fucking going to BLM and taking Instagram photos. Fuck everything about that.
Not everything is a photo op.
Seen it. I've seen that shit firsthand. The amount of people who show up,
walk
for protests,
up, take a selfie, and bounce
to just be there, and then the amount of people who are there when you're actually getting fucking raided by the police. Let me fucking tell you, man.
People get real scarce real quick, don't they?
Uh huh. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Don't use that shit as brownie points for your friends of color and your indigenous friends either, because they don't fucking care. We don't care. Like oh yeah, I did this and this, look at me doing all the things, let me virtue signal at you.
I mean, I will say this though, like, if you show up, I actually do fucking respect that. Like, there's a person in our group who showed up at Standing Rock. I still have respect for them until the day they fucking die, because they're a settler who is at Standing Rock. That they put their life on the fucking line. I'm never gonna forget that. You know,
I think I knew who you're talking about too. And holy shit, let me just say, they are a solid motherfucker.
Fucking love that son of a bitch.
But yeah, fine. Be there, do all the shit, do the things. Don't get proud. Don't treat it as photo op. Actually, be helpful. Put your boots on.
Put your boots fucking on. We're gonna be all right.
Gentlemen.
Damn it, I'm so sorry.
We only lost 15 minutes.
We're good. We're good.
And I've gotten all my stumbles out of the way already, because I was already feeling a little bit like I fucked up. So we're already good.
Okay.
You didn't, but take two will be even better than take one was.
Take two will be better. I'm glad I realized it now and not like at the end.
Oh my god.
I've done it before.
We've lost a whole fucking episode that way.
Yeah. Okay. I've hit the record button. I've been recording for the past 30 seconds. We are good. Okay.
All right,
I'm gonna
do
the
again.
Intro.